Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Rick had some technical difficulties today, couldn't make it, but I've got Tony on the line with me. And Tony, we've got a lot to cover. How you doing today?
Very good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. We've got always more in the news. So a continuation of a theme we've hit on a lot, how one Brazilian judge could suspend Elon Musk's X. And so I read through the story, and effectively, it sounds like this Supreme Court justice in Brazil has the ability to suspend X in the country of, I think they said like a fifth of Brazil's population uses it. And they, as I understand it, Twitter or X removed their legal representative, took them out of the country because of threat of arrest. And they're saying you need to assign a new legal representative or else we're going to suspend you. And so it's kind of like who's going to blink first sort of thing. But we've seen this, gosh, we're seeing it in the UK right now. We saw it with the arrest of Telegram CEO. We saw it in 2022 with the truckers protest in Canada. And it just seems to be picking up. What are your comments on this one?
Well, I mean, it has to be absolutely clear for everyone that this is an attack. A direct attack on freedom and freedom of speech globally. I mean, those lunatics in power are reaching, you know, the far ends of their desperate state of being. They are losing control of everything. And, you know, when you have a rabid dog put in a corner, you can expect the unexpected. And this is just an example of them. What it also does is that it sheds light on, you know, the clown world of the judicial system, especially in countries like Brazil. This is no judge. This is like a paid criminal who's been given a judge outfit, a Halloween judge outfit, to represent some form of judge. But this, there's no law, there's no fairness being, you know, administered in any way, shape, or form here. This is clearly an attack on someone who is not playing ball by the rules of these psychopaths. And, you know, this is it's expected. And I think it's just going to get worse, you know, as they continue to lose control and as they continue to get even more desperate, you know, these things will only deteriorate further until something gives. And I don't want to speculate on what that something is, but generally speaking, it is a very ugly picture.
Yeah. I think, and this is just our plea to anyone listening. I mean, and just wake up to this. There are new options, for communication, decentralized open source options like Nostr. Our team uses Keet, for secure messaging. And, I would add one sort of meme I saw was, I read about this story initially a few weeks ago, the tension between Elon Musk and the Brazilian government, but they said, effectively, they're only coming after X. What does that tell you about Facebook and TikTok and all these others? Well, they're complying. They're censoring what the government asks them to censor so they can continue operating. Because as I understand it, this has been about censorship and Musk refuses to comply, which love or hate Elon Musk, he has plenty of things to love or hate about him. But, you know, that he's not willingly complying. So stay tuned on this. I'm sure there will be more in the coming weeks as to how this all plays out. Tony, we were talking about this offline a bit. So James Lavis shared that just a year ago, he and Greg Foss were on Simply Bitcoin, and they were talking about unfunded U.S. liabilities of $192,573,000 per citizen. And today, 12 months later, numbers up about 20%. To 647,000 per citizen. He said this is simply mathematically not sustainable. And this, I think, goes to the heart of a lot of what you talk about. The solution, in my mind, is going to be print money, fund these liabilities, because or best case, maybe they begin to pull back on some of what they have promised Americans, but that's no good either. You got people relying on pensions and Social Security and Medicare. What are your, where does your head go in light of your experience when you see numbers like this?
this is the unstoppable train wreck. You know, that's been mentioned on numerous times by numerous people in the space. The money printing is going to go on, and it's going to get exponentially worse as, you know, global situations deteriorate. It went up 20% in a year. By the end of this year, we could be up another 30-40%. If World War III breaks out, it could go up even more. I mean, there's no limit to the damage that this is going to cause, unfortunately. I mean, like, you have to understand, the fiat Ponzi has already failed. Okay, the cracks are already, you know, they're getting wider and wider at a faster rate. So when the dam finally bursts, that is imminent, in my opinion, anyhow. And when that happens, like, what do you expect to see other than, you know, a complete hell show? I don't know, man. I don't want to speculate, but I can tell you from my previous experience that this is going to be extremely ugly. And I feel sorry for anyone who has not taken proper measures to safeguard themselves, you know, especially financially, with an asset that cannot be affected by this other than positively, which, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's only Bitcoin in full self-custody that can provide an insurance against, you know, an incoming calamity.
Yeah, I was actually talking with a friend of mine. He was giving me some feedback that he thinks some of my writing and content has become a bit too conspiratorial. And, you know, his request was like, hey, what if could you go back to talking more about Bitcoin as a store of value? Bitcoin is a, you know, a future medium of exchange. And, you know, any and all feedback is welcome. And I said, yeah, I mean, there's, but, you know, eventually people get bored hearing the same monetary properties of Bitcoin over and over. But I think it's equally important, and you talk about this a lot, Tony. I mean, I think kudos to you that people get their dopamine hit from the number go up. But in reality, Bitcoin is a freedom technology in addition to a form of money. And it helps us evade censorship. It helps us to have something completely independent of this mess that we have going on. Now, could it be not be the thing that people ultimately run to? There's a non-zero chance of that. Will it be? I just don't see how that, you know, as more and more people learn about it, how that doesn't happen. And certainly in the case of collapse or, you know, major sort of financial chaos, I think the Bitcoiners, I mean, we're holding steady at, you know, call it 60,000 right now. I think Bitcoiners are only more incentivized to hold it to higher and higher, you know, exchange rates with fiat currencies, because we have enough adoption, I guess is my point, that Bitcoin could go to 1 million, 5 million, 10 million, just with the user base it has today. Because if financial chaos arrives, which to your point, I think it will eventually, whether that's in the next 6 months or a couple of years or 20 years, whatever, it only incentivizes those people to hold it stronger because it's their only option, right? So, yeah, just, you know,
well,
it's a hard message to deliver to people.
You need all these bad things to happen for people to see the value of Bitcoin. If everything was rosy and everything was fine, you'd be hard-pressed to convince someone that they need to change, right? Like, why do I have to change my currency? I'm living fine. I can buy what I want, do what I want. Life's good. But as you start seeing these calamities, you know, one after another, especially these days, you know, the crisis after crisis, the gap between them is getting smaller and smaller. And people are feeling it that they can't afford as much things as much as they did in the past. And as this thing gets worse and people get hungrier and more desperate, where else are they going to look? You know, like, there are no other options. You either sit and beg the government, the cause of your, you know, deteriorated life in the first place, for help, which is stupid, or you look for the exit, which in this case, fortunately, humanity has it, Bitcoin. Okay, so part of the world, unfortunately, in my opinion, is not going to do anything. And they're going to be very happy living as, you know, slaves, so to speak, you know, like happy, following orders, being like, you know, the donkeys that they are. Some people are just happy in that ecosystem, and that's fine. But there's going to be a considerable considerably larger number of folks that won't. And these folks ultimately find Bitcoin for the right reasons, because now their lives are impacted and they need a solution that sticks. Okay, not a temporary solution, not a solution that can be co-opted and manipulated and, you know, blown up again by someone else. They need something that they have 100% full control of. This is why we aggressively push the message to have people study Bitcoin, to understand that it has nothing to do with number go up. When you see Bitcoin's fiat price go up astronomically, it's because the value of that fiat has gone down astronomically. Bitcoin, one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. That's never going to change. But that garbage toilet paper that you've been slaving for your whole life thinking, you know, is the solution to your riches and good life, that is going to zero. And that's why the number, the fiat representation of Bitcoin continues to go up. But Bitcoin's value is the same. One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin no matter what happens. So it's sad to say, but if it wasn't for all these, you know, horrific events happening worldwide, it's the best marketing for Bitcoin. Like, how else would you justify that you need it, right? Unless you compare it to what you're leaving behind.
Yep. Well said. Alrighty, a little bit closer to home for the Bitcoin way. We talk a lot about cybersecurity. We encourage our clients to move even beyond the self-custody arrangements with which we help and into protecting their online life. So Dick's Sporting Goods, for our global listeners, I don't know if this is a global chain or not, but it's a large sporting goods chain here in the United States. And they disclosed unauthorized third-party access to information, including certain confidential information. And it, you know, so cyber attacks have become increasingly common with corporate companies. And this is just par for the course. You made a good point. The point I made when we were talking offline about this was, you know, effectively, you know, they want to protect your information because it's bad publicity. It's bad PR if they don't. But it's not their full-time job. They have a security team that's working all the time. But most of what they're trying to do is sell sneakers and clothes and, you know, basketballs. You made the point, though, that of why would you share your information with this company in the first place? You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is a sporting company. Why would you give them all the sensitive information? And on the flip side, why would they need it? Like, why are they asking people for it? You know, for companies like this, I would never give them their, I'd share fake information instantly. They have no business requesting that information in the first place. I mean, you could argue that, yeah, and if you're ordering something online, they have to ship it to you. Okay, so you ship it, but then why are you saving all this information? You don't need it. They probably keep it for marketing purposes and to hopefully, you know, reconcoct it and sell you something else down the line. But at the same time, you know, if they get hacked, well, then they lose control of these, of that data, and they don't know how it's going to be used. So they're putting you at risk. So why don't, you know, why not justify suing them now for being irresponsible and putting my life in danger by having somebody hack your infrastructure that you were careless about and didn't invest enough money in to protect, right? But like you said, these are like businesses. They have, cybersecurity has nothing to do with their specialties. It's not their bread and butter. So it's considered as an expense, and most folks don't prioritize such expenses because, you know, it's not that important. I'd rather focus on my bonuses, you know, my vacations. That's where the money usually goes. And who pays the price when something bad goes wrong? Well, it's you, the consumer. So again, the centralization of information that we were led to believe was, you know, for everybody's safety, for everybody's protection, it's becoming crystal clear almost on a daily basis now that this is a complete fabrication. It's a complete lie. It has nothing to do with anybody's protection or safety. This is for data collection, whether it's for surveillance, whether it's for marketing, whether it's to sell you stuff. It is not for anybody's good interest. So when it's companies like a Dick's Sporting Goods, don't give them real information. Use concoct aliases, fake stuff, and just send it that way. And as a business, like if somebody from Dick's Sporting Goods is listening, stop hoarding this information. You don't need it. You know, you are doing your clients more of a disservice than a benefit. I mean, you can take it for the purpose of shipping them that stuff. But once that's done, nuke that information. You absolutely don't need it. If somebody likes your product, they'll be back on their own. They don't need you to spam them with brochures and emails and, you know, constant messages reminding them that you exist. If they like your product, believe me, they will be back on their own.
Yeah. The closer you can keep your sensitive data to home, the better. That is for sure.
Hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter, and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty. Whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon.
Larry Lepard. So Lynn Alden has this meme that she shares all the time. Nothing stops this train. And Zero Head said Fitch projects U.S. deficit 8.1%, which means that U.S. debt will hit $40 trillion in just over a year. We just hit $35 trillion, and now we're at 35.2 or something already. Zero Head says great news for crypto and gold. And what he means by crypto is obviously, I'm looking for Lynn's response here. Did I miss it? Oh yeah, there we go. You're goddamn right. So she's confirming when she talks about all of these problems, this is really sort of what it centers around, is just the debt situation. We have a sovereign debt crisis on our hands. We sort of talked about this a bit with James Lavish's commentary and his discussion on Simply Bitcoin, but I guess where my head goes is, like, we're talking about, if you look at like U.S. debt to GDP back in the 1940s, it was worse than it is today. And so people will say, oh yeah, like, you know, we've got a huge runway. But the difference was, we had World War II going on. There was a very temporary reason why debt was so high, and then it plummeted shortly thereafter. Since, we've just seen it slowly creep up and then more recently begin to skyrocket. And what is it, like $1 trillion every 100 days or something that we've seen the last couple, like for the last year or two straight? And it looks to only be increasing. What do you think when you see these sorts of numbers?
It just reconfirms that we're at the end of this Ponzi. This is a very bad sign, you know, when you start seeing numbers like this. And Lynn Alden is spot on. I mean, she's being optimistic, 40 trillion. I think it'll be much higher than that, because the U.S. dollar, the fiat system, it's failed. Okay, it's not that it's failing; it's already failed. Except the cracks, like the damage that it's causing because it's failing, they're getting bigger and bigger. And as these cracks expand, you need more drastic measures to keep it from finally exploding. Like, think of this as like a volcano that's been brewing and brewing and brewing, and it's just at the teetering at the tip. It's going to take like a pin drop for the whole thing to erupt and wipe out everything in its path. That's what I see. We're at that stage. So how do you prevent this from happening? Well, you have to print, you know, exponentially more in order to push or delay this back as much as possible. But there's only so much time that you have, that no matter what you do, you're not going to beat this train. This train is going to come ramming straight into the world, blowing everything up in its path. And when that happens, that's the horror movie that I've been warning about. It's something that no one has seen before. And I'm telling you, it is extremely ugly. And when that day comes, and again, this is not about spreading doom and gloom. I've seen this in a tiny country, okay, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. The U.S. alone is a billion times larger than Lebanon. So what I've seen still gives me PTSD at night. If 10% of that happens in the U.S., I have no words to describe what to expect. But I can categorically confirm that it's going to be the ugliest thing humanity has ever seen. And I hope, I pray to God, I am wrong on this.
Yeah. All righty. On to your favorite topic. I know, Tony, you love ETFs. You love talking about ETFs. All you own are the Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah, man.
So I'm going to express my opinion first, and then you are free to banter with me on this. So Justin, Wells Fargo is preparing wealth advisors to actively pitch Bitcoin ETFs starting to clients next month. So for me, my take is this, and maybe I'm being too optimistic. ETFs are unhelpful. They give you exclusively exposure to number go up in fiat and you know, denominated in fiat. There's no sovereignty. There's no freedom technology. It's just the number of dollars. You accrue more dollars if Bitcoin goes up. But my sense is if some of the pain that we're talking about here, you know, comes to fruition, that some of these ETF holders will say, well, or even without the pain, they just see the number go up. It might intrigue them to learn more. Like, what is this thing that I hold that I know nothing about, but I've just seen it go up over the last decade or whatever. And maybe some of those people will willingly sell their ETF shares, take the haircut on capital gains tax, and get into self-custody Bitcoin. That's the optimistic side of me. I think it probably takes some level of pain for that to really begin to happen, but you're welcome to completely disagree with that.
Well, look, the Bitcoin ETFs, everybody knows it's not real Bitcoin, but it's a lot of noise about Bitcoin. So it's attracting a lot of attention that would otherwise, you know, not be looking at Bitcoin. So on that front, it's very positive. It's free marketing. You know, they're pitching it to their clients. They're high net worth individuals that, you know, have never considered it, because most of these people, you have to keep in mind that most of the clients, these folks target, are of an older age group. So technology is not really like their playground. And so they have to be convinced, you know, that somebody that who knows what they're doing is promoting it. So, you know, they rely on that and they go for it, but they don't understand fundamentally what they're buying, which is nothing. You know, they're still in the same fiat system, subjected to the same bullshit rules, the taxes and all that stuff. I'm hoping through this, the younger generation that's associated to these boomers, they start paying attention to, you know, what they actually hold and start opting out of the fake Bitcoin and into the real Bitcoin. But if it takes that step before, you know, getting into the paper Bitcoin, then so be it. You know, like, there's no such thing as bad advertisement. You know, like, this is just bringing attention to an asset that these folks may not necessarily have been looking at prior to this. So if BlackRock says it's okay and these guys look now, great. You know, if Morgan Stanley says it's okay and these guys buy, that's fine. You can't expect everybody to understand it, but at least some percentage of them will. There's another interesting theory, though, about this whole ETF that's been, you know, buzzing around. You know, take that with a grain of salt. It's just like a tinfoil hat moment. But maybe these guys are selling, you know, these ETFs because, you know, they genuinely believe most people are stupid. And so they will sucker them into, you know, giving up their hard cash, you know, and they end up buying the Bitcoin. Maybe with enough time gathering a large percentage of the available supply to maybe hard fork a version of Bitcoin and some sort of concoct the laws to force people to use their version of Bitcoin versus the, you know, the original one. That's also a theory that's been playing around, you know, in some circles. I'm hoping that happens because that's going to categorically destroy them once and for all, because it's not going to work. But, you know, if somebody's delusional enough to think that this, you know, has a chance, then any Bitcoin maximalist would sort of like want to push for it just so that we eliminate these people once and for all and distribute, you know, that Bitcoin amongst those who really need it, which is the people, right? That may be far-fetched. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. But if it does, you know, anyone who understands Bitcoin would take that fake Bitcoin and sell it and buy the original one, effectively bankrupting that new project of theirs, putting an end to it. So these are my thoughts. I don't know what you think about this.
I don't know. I've thought about that enough. I definitely don't think any... like institutional or governmental hard fork of Bitcoin succeeds, because that's the value of running your node is you get a vote and you get to stay in the network that you choose. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, I think even though there would be a lack of education, there's probably a massive education gap. I think most people would recognize, no, I want the one that doesn't inflate. You know, like there's only the hard cap of 21 million. I want the one that's been proven over 15 years, not, you know, whatever. I think there's enough distrust of institutions and government that even though people go with the flow when it's necessary, when their wealth is at stake, I think people start to look into that more carefully, because they're like, I don't want to lose everything I have. Like I've been working for 40 years. I don't want to, you know, pick the wrong one. I don't want to be the B cash. And make a mistake and not have anything. So yeah, I think BTC wins regardless. I'm with you on that. All righty, well, Tony, go on.
No, I was just going to add that you don't want to be using money that is controlled by someone else. That lesson has been learned already, I hope, by enough people so as not to repeat it. Because if you haven't learned that, you're going to learn it very, very soon when everything's going to be ripped away from you. So just a heads up for those that, you know, care.
Definitely. So just for fun, Relay, a European exchange, had the biggest Bitcoin OTC trade in company history happen today. And they said, guess how much it was. So Tony, I'd love to hear your guess. So these OTC trades go on behind the scenes. They don't hit the exchange. It's more of a peer-to-peer private sort of transaction. Don't impact price. How many Bitcoin do you think someone was buying?
I'm not sure how big Relay is. I would say, I don't know, maybe like 90 Bitcoin. That would be my guess.
I don't know how big Relay is either, but my guess would be something more in the hundreds. I think I would go with 250 to 300, somewhere in that ballpark.
Wow,
because I have a feeling there are a lot of wealthy people in Europe who are beginning to wake up to this, have the capital to deploy. Maybe they sold an asset or a business or whatever, and maybe they've been a Bitcoiner for a long time and they finally sold their company and they just got a bunch of fresh powder to deploy toward Bitcoin. So I'm guessing in the couple hundred range, and hopefully they'll tell us here in the next couple of days after people finish guessing. But I think that is,
I hope you're right,
all we
man.
Got.
That'd be
man.
Extremely bullish.
Yeah, because those sorts of trades, you know, you don't know who it is. It'll be anonymous, but they get people's attention. It's like, oh, someone with $50 million sitting around just bought $50 million worth of Bitcoin. Like it's like people read books on Warren Buffett and they track Nancy Pelosi's trading history. And like they like all these successful people who trade so effectively. It's like, you know, we'd be unwise to not pay attention to what some of these people like Anthony Scaramucci and, you know, Elon Musk has kind of been hit or miss on this, but there are more and more people who have real wealth at stake that are dipping their toes into Bitcoin. And I think people start to wake up to that because there's like a celebrity sort of aura that surrounds those transactions. And maybe this gives us some good PR for the asset. So that's my take. Tony, I think that's all we got today. We covered a lot of ground in a half hour, though. Appreciate you coming on. For anyone listening, check out the Bitcoin Way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We help with self-custody, securing your online life, your mobile life, Plan B, residency to citizenship options. And basically, our goal is to help people become self-sovereign and to prepare and plan for so much of what we talk about, what Tony reiterates on every podcast he goes on to, and what he discusses here on Bitcoin Banter. So check it out, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Tony, thanks as always, man. We'll talk soon.
It's a pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
Cheers.